You're in for a treat today. I'm so excited to have Dr. Kat Bodden, who is a naturopathic doctor, the founder of Sea Change Medicine, with us. She is here to share all of her wisdom. We're going to talk about everything from gut health all the way to, you know, what to do if you're interested in holistic medicine. So, Dr. Kat, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So I want to kick off because you just have such an interesting story. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you even got into naturopathic medicine.
Yeah, it's a funny one. You know, I didn't even know naturopathic medicine existed for quite some time. I grew up in a family of healthcare providers. My dad is an emergency room doctor, now retired, and my mom is a nurse. And I always knew I was going to be somehow involved in the medical field. And so after I graduated from college, traveled a bit, I started working as a technician in the emergency department at Yale, which is a level one trauma center. So crazy. I learned so much about medicine and so much about just people in general. It was an amazing learning experience, but it also really showed me what I didn't want to do. Now, I don't shun modern medicine at all. It's amazing. And you know, if you are actively having a true life-threatening emergency, the ER is a fantastic place to go. Right. But most of the people who would show up, you know, they're, unless their like leg was falling off or they were having a heart attack, you know, they were there for chronic conditions, things like high blood pressure, other types of cardiovascular disease, kidney disease. And they were kind of just given a bunch of medication and told like, you know, maybe you should lose some weight or follow up with your primary care doctor. And there wasn't the time for education really and teaching people how to take better care of themselves. So I found naturopathic medicine, honestly, by the weirdest stroke of luck. I was actually at work. It was a weird day where we didn't have many patients in urgent care. And I was reading some blog post about like, let's look inside this nutrition guru's fridge or something. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And they kept saying ND after her name. And I know what, I need to go back and like find out who this person was and email them at some point. But I thought ND, I thought it was a typo. And I was like, why? There's so many typos in this article. Who's proofreading this? And then it said naturopathic doctor. And I was like, well, wait, what is that? And I looked it up and it was all about treating the whole person and doctor as teacher and a truly like holistic way of looking at health, not just treating disease, but also adding health into people's lives. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. And I immediately just like told the PA who I was working with, I was like, I'll be right back. And like ran outside and called the school that was in Connecticut at the time and just made a huge life decision. At that point, I was like studying for the MCAT, thinking I was going to go down the conventional route and just hard pivoted and never once looked back.
Wow. By the way, yeah. I didn't know you were from Connecticut. I'm from Connecticut too.
Oh,
my sister works at Yale. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, total digression.
Small world. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
How interesting. So you just felt called to it. Like, you know, like that, there was that light bulb moment, you know, and from there, what was the journey of, you know, going to get training and school? I mean, I know there's so much work involved. Walk us through that a bit.
Yeah. So when all this is happening, it was May and school started later that summer. And it was just, I knew the best schools were out here on the West Coast. I'm in Portland, Oregon now, but it was just a little bit too much to like upheave my entire life in 2 months. Mm. So I did my first year at the college in Connecticut, which actually doesn't exist anymore. And then transferred to the National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon, which is the oldest naturopathic college. And it is, school is a lot. It is like drinking from a fire hose. We get the same number of clinical hours of training in like every aspect of medicine as conventional medical school, besides potentially pharmacology or drugs, plus all of the naturopathic modalities. So you're in school some days from like 8 to 6, sometimes on the weekend as well. It is a lot. But it was, you know, especially after getting through the first 2 years, like once we got into the clinical aspect, it was just so exciting and I loved it. Definitely glad to be graduated and not in that high stress environment anymore.
Yes. Yes.
But it was really wonderful.
You know, and I think that's really interesting. You talk about the rigor of the training and, you know, kind of all the things that you had to do. What are some, and I think that actually is a myth. You know, I think sometimes there's a myth out there that people think that naturopaths don't have the same rigor of training. You know, I hate to say it, but I've heard this from people. What are some other common myths that you'd like to debunk about, naturopathy and naturopathic medicine.
Yeah, well, so the tricky thing with that myth that you're speaking to is that there are certified naturopaths, which are not naturopathic doctors or naturopathic physicians.
Right.
So to anyone who's listening, if they're looking to go down the naturopathic route, you want to look for someone that actually has a medical degree, because there are some online programs where you don't have the same rigorous training, you're not learning the same foundational sciences, you're not having the same sort of attention to detail and like full picture of health that we do in medical school. So just make sure you're looking for someone who actually went to one of the accredited medical schools in the States. I think there's about six now. There might be seven. But anyways, other myths are, naturopaths are the same thing as homeopaths and they just use homeopathy. Yeah.
I've heard this one.
All naturopaths shun modern medicine and don't think that there's like any use for any kind of pharmaceuticals or vaccines or anything like that. And I truly believe that for optimal health for everyone in our country, an integrative approach really is the way. Right. And I refer out to conventional doctors all the time. They have the most advanced training and they have really fancy diagnostic tools and excellent imaging practices that I don't have access to often. What I tell my clients is, you know, if you go to, you know, maybe you go see an endocrinologist or they go see a nephrologist for kidney disease or something like that, I always say, like, let's use them for their tools and their knowledge and their brain to get the diagnosis. But we may have some that usually conventionally they only recommend a pill or surgery. And so I say, you know, whatever they tell you, just know we may have many more things back on my end to help support you in a more holistic way rather than just suppressing your symptoms with medication, not really treating the root cause, or cutting something out of your body, which could potentially stay in.
Right, exactly. I think that the cutting something out of your body is actually a whole other rabbit hole that I want to get into, because I feel like a lot of times there's that prescriptive without having, you know, gotten to the root cause or trying different things. But anyway, I digress. Would love to talk, you mentioned whole body, which I think is a really interesting concept. So explain that whole body approach. What does it mean? And what does it actually entail?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Do you know the analogy of three blind people and the elephant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so for people who don't, I'll talk through it pretty quickly, but basically, sometimes if you go and see specialists in terms of medicine, they are so hyper-focused on their area of expertise that they fail to see the whole thing. So if you have three blind people coming and examining an elephant and one goes over to the tail, one is looking at the trunk and one is looking at a leg, they're going to have a completely different opinion of what actually the entire organism is. So seeing from someone, coming to see someone who looks at the entire picture can kind of zoom out, you know, we can see, oh yes, this is an elephant here. In the same way, an analogy I use in my practice or an example I'll use when I'm talking to prospective clients is, say you have migraines and you go to your conventional doctor and they say, okay, here, you have a headache. That's all that's going on. Just take this medication when you have the headache and it won't be so bad, hopefully.
Right.
I will go way deeper and say, okay, yeah, I can prescribe. In Oregon, I have, you know, prescriptive rights. I can prescribe the medication. I don't, but I could. But I like to look at and see, okay, what is causing these migraines in the first place? Is it something that, is it coming from your abdomen? Abdominal migraines are a huge issue. Is it a diet? Is it stress? Is it lifestyle? Is it lack of sleep? You know, is there other types of imbalances, even just like musculoskeletal tension going on in your body that's triggering these headaches? And what can we do to prevent them from happening in the first place?
Right.
So if, you know, John, James, and Stephen all come in with migraines, they're all going to have completely different treatments. I don't just treat the migraine, but we treat the whole person.
Right. Interesting. You know, do you ever get people, I'm sure you do, but that are resistant, you know, that come to you and they don't understand, maybe someone else brought them to see you and they're resistant and, you know, maybe walk me through some cases of that and then how you're able to really work with that person.
Yeah. So I have pretty detailed intake in the way that I work with people. It's actually a 2-hour appointment. Okay. So by that time at the end of the 2 hours, I just feel so lucky that I have the time to actually sit down and understand what's going on with my patient. You know, it's not just a 15-minute visit where we just are rapid fire asking questions. I get to know about their home life, their sleep habits, their diet, their lifestyle. And by the end of the 2 hours, I usually don't have anybody who's still hesitant because we're able to actually get down and address, like, okay, what are these blocks? What are you afraid of? And many people who I see, truthfully, have seen anywhere from 2 to 20 doctors before they find my office. And there is a lot of medical trauma, and people have been told that their symptoms are not valid and they're not real and it's all in their head or it's just something they have to live with. And so I'm so happy I get to share this because one of my clients last week read this quote and she cried when she was reading it to me because she actually, this is how she felt when we started working together. But it was healing starts when you feel heard. And so I think there is something so beautiful to have someone just like share their story and really felt listened to and taken seriously.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that that's one of the things that I've heard consistently is that a lot of people feel so invalidated by modern medicine. They feel dismissed. And, it's really difficult when you constantly feel dismissed. You're like, I'm living in my body. These are things that are real for me. And if someone's saying that they're not, it kind of steals your agency, which is really, really difficult place to be in. So that's beautiful that your client felt that. That's amazing. I love your See the Change program. Walk me through a bit of the program and the five pillars of health, for the program.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work with my clients one-on-one in individual wellness programs. So I call it the Sea Change program, but technically each one is completely individualized to the person who I'm working with. It's not really like a plug-and-play system, but they're all based on my five pillars of health. So I'll walk you through, I'll list all five and then I'll walk you through them in more detail. So it's nourishment, detoxification, gut health, movement and mindfulness, or M&M, I call it, and then mentoring. So food really is foundation. I always ask people, do you fail on diets? And they say, oh yeah, I can't do diets. I just like do it for 2 weeks and then I totally fail. But I don't think people fail on diets. I think diets fail people. People often will do okay on something restrictive for the short term, but this is not about short-term results. This is about long-term success. So I want to be people to be on a plan that works for them for the rest of their life. And I do lots of nutritional counseling and meal plans and guides. And, I, of course, want my clients to be having a good blend of fat, fiber, and protein, but I want them to be enjoying their food. Food is such a beautiful way to connect with people. I use the word nourishment instead of nutrition because it should be good for the soul too. And I don't want people feeling deprived at all. So I love showing people that there is a really awesome healthy way. A really awesome health promoting way of eating where you feel better after eating instead of worse, that doesn't break the budget or require a culinary degree or, 18 hours doing meal prep every Sunday. Super easy to do, and yummy too.
I love that.
Yeah. And then detox. So when I say detox, people often think like, oh, I'm going to do a green juice fast or I'm going to do IVs or I'm going to fast. And I actually don't mean those short-term targeted cleanses. What I mean is supporting our body's own organs of detox. So we live in, even if you live a clean lifestyle, which many of my clients come in, they already are, we just live in a toxic place. There's something like 6.4 billion pounds of chemicals released into the atmosphere every year, just in the United States. And these chemicals affect every part of our body. So what we want to do is really support our body's own detoxification processes to help eliminate them. The liver, the kidney, the gut, the lymph, the lungs. It's really easy to do. And after being on some thorough detox, people usually have a boost in metabolism, clearer skin, better energy, and overall just feel more vibrant. Then gut health. And this is truly like the crux of my practice. So of course, I want people to be having great digestion. So they're able to absorb all the nutrients in the healthy food they're now eating, having good bowel movements. But gut health is so much more than digestion. So 90% of our serotonin, that is a neurotransmitter for people who don't know, that is important for positivity and well-being and feelings of safety. 90% of that is actually made in our gut. So if someone's coming in and they are having anxiety or depression or just feeling uneasy, my answer isn't, oh, let's give you an SSRI or some type of medication that changes serotonin. It's, let's go one step deeper. And is there some type of imbalance going on in the gut that's keeping your body from making enough serotonin in the first place? So I do a lot of stool and microbiome testing in my practice. We can actually see what's in their gut and get them on a completely individualized protocol to help heal. Lastly, with the gut health, 70% of our immune system is also in the gut, which of course now, like in this, COVID world, let alone just colds and flus and everything else that we're exposed to, we want to make sure we have really robust immune health. Fourth pillar, Movement and mindfulness, you know, most people, they don't need me to tell them that exercise is important, but you know, it is not about just walking on a treadmill to burn calories or, you know, joining a CrossFit gym and doing crazy weightlifting. It's just about finding ways that you love to move your body and making it a part of your daily routine. And I really stress the importance that exercise should not be punishment. It should be enjoyable. So gardening, dancing, hiking, you know, whatever it is, just do it daily. And yes, it's important to move, but it is equally important to find stillness. You know, we live in such a crazy, stressed out, chaotic world. Mindfulness is a huge part of my practice, and I use a lot of therapies that directly support our vagus nerve. So the biggest nerve of the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of our nervous system responsible for resting, digesting, detoxing, and it's where all cellular rejuvenation and repair happens. Contrast to the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight, flight, freeze, our stress response. So I teach people these easy ways to coax their nervous system into this more deeper relaxation state. And then lastly is mentoring. And this is what I find is really the most important of all, and how my practice is so unique is each month I set aside a certain number of new client appointments because I want to be readily available to people. So in the beginning, I actually talk with my clients weekly, and I'm here to really answer questions as they arise, help them hold themselves accountable, encourage them, celebrate their successes. You know, I keep really close contact with my clients to keep them on the path moving forward. Not just, you know, I don't know, sometimes you go to see the doctor and they say, okay, go do these 20 things. I'll see you in 2 months.
Yeah.
But life, I mean, and that could be, they could be a beautiful 20 things, but then life gets in the way and, you know, they come back and be like, oh, I'm only doing a couple of these things actually. So I just find by being able to really have this mentoring and guiding role, people can just get to their goals so much faster.
I love that. Yeah, I think that the mentoring is so key. I mean, it's just such a missing, you know, you give someone multiple things that they need to do to shift their life, and it doesn't often happen at once. Typically, most people can only handle 1 to 3 habit changes at a time. So having someone actually support them and work with them is so, so important. I absolutely love that. I love that. And I love what you said about, you know, exercise. The biggest shift for me was thinking of exercise as play as well. So it led me to start doing beach volleyball because it was fun versus like, oh, I got to crank it out in the gym. I feel like when I was in that mindset, I just would never go. I would, you know, be like, oh, I don't want to go. I'm procrastinating. I agree. Yeah. I think that that's so important. Exercise can be play too.
And it's something you get to do, not that you have to do. Like, we have these amazing bodies, and I just want people to like celebrate the way that they're able to move their bodies and use them. And not just for the immediate benefit of feeling good after a workout, but for just keeping muscle mass on as we age. And, you know, I tell a lot of people, like, you're not working out for who you are right now, but for who you're going to be in 30 years.
100%.
Right?
That's so, so true. I love that. I love that. I love that. You talked a lot about diet. Would love to know, what are your go-to foods, herbs, and supplements? Like, what are the things that you know, on a daily use personally? And maybe what are some of the things that you typically are recommending to your clients?
Yes. Plants, any type of plant, especially leafy greens, ideal, especially brassica family vegetables. So things like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, kale, chard. These are super nutrient dense, and they have lots of phytochemicals in them. And they also contain something called sulforaphane, which is really helpful for liver detox. They're rich in fiber, so they can contribute to satiety. They can help lower cholesterol, and they taste really good too. And if I'm working with someone and they don't like vegetables, it usually means I don't know how to cook them. So I have tons of easy recipes, but you know, people can just learn how to cook a little bit better with a little bit more flavor. And usually I get people eating vegetables. Protein is another huge source. You know, most of my clients eat animal products, but I do have some that are plant-based. I myself try to eat as mostly regeneratively raised meat as I can. But I do eat animal products, and I try to have people having ideally 30, but at least 20 grams of protein 3 times per day. Average person in the United States is eating mostly carbs, with a little bit of protein. So it can be a really big shift. And this is something where sometimes, especially in the morning, protein powders can be helpful. You know, you can add them to oatmeal, you can add them to coconut yogurt. You don't have to necessarily have it in a smoothie. That can be a really great way to up your protein intake. For hormonal health, which a lot of my clients are coming in with hormonal imbalances, 30 grams of protein within 2 hours of waking is my number one recommendation.
Interesting. Just curious, because, you know, I've gone back and forth personally with intermittent fasting, and I personally feel like it sometimes messes with my hormones, just depending on Would love your take on that. You know, like what to do? Is there a certain way to think about fasting, especially when you're dealing with hormonal health issues, which, you know, I do. Like, I definitely struggle with estrogen dominance.
So when all the research started coming out about intermittent fasting, it was just like the silver bullet. It was going to cure all of our woes. It's like, okay, cool. I eat for 4 hours a day. I can eat whatever I want and the pounds come off and I have amazing energy. For women, I premenopausally, I actually only recommend intermittent fasting during a certain phase of their menstrual cycle, usually right after they finish bleeding before ovulation. At other times in the cycle, it actually work against the body because all the research
Wonder.
on intermittent fasting has been done in men, like most medical research. And men's hormones are just a completely different arc of the day compared to women. So for men, you know, intermittent fasting can actually be great. And for postmenopausal women, it can be helpful as well. For premenopausal women, I usually caution against it. I'm actually usually getting people eating more food. Now, there is a type of, I don't really call it intermittent fasting, I call it circadian fasting, but a way of eating that still has a nice pause between it. And basically with circadian fasting, you just eat when it's light out. So here in the Pacific Northwest, this time of year, it's so easy to do. The sun is up at like 5, it sets at 9:30, tons of time. In the winter is a little bit harder. We have way, way fewer hours of light. I'm not perfect myself. I try to do the best I can, especially now that I'm learning a lot more about it and advocating for it a lot more. I really try and walk the walk. So this winter I will definitely be having dinner a lot earlier than last year. But it is good. Anyways, types of fasting or types of pausing and eating I recommend is having at least 12 hours between dinner and breakfast. And if you can, going 3 hours in between meals. The reason for this is every 3 to 4 hours, something called the migrating motor complex, which is a series of muscle contractions through our intestines that kind of moves the food along, we get this big wave of what's called peristalsis or that type of movement. So it clears out everything in our digestive tract. It can move food along, move stool along, keep bacteria from building up. So it's really helpful in the prevention of SIBO, which is a big hot topic these days, or small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And if we don't do that, if we're snacking every hour or so, we don't have that same clear out. And so people can feel bloated, they can have more digestive issues, they can have more bacterial overgrowth in their small intestine as well.
How interesting. I've actually never heard that pause, the 3 hour, you know, in between meals. You know, like I think that there's, and that's one thing, there's so much conflicting information out there.
My gosh, I know.
You know, I guess to you, like, how do you sort through all of the information, all the noise? Because it's true for me, I was on the intermittent fasting, you know, bandwagon. I was like, okay, this is going to be the thing. And I have to say, personally, I felt terrible. Like, I was just like really struggling. And I kept trying it for a while, and it just felt like multiple things were worse. Like, I, you know, developed some skin issues. My anemia got worse. I felt like it was just really, really difficult. So anyway, I digress. How do you sort through the information and find what's true for you to do?
Yeah, it is challenging because you will look for these like really seemingly reputable sources saying completely opposite things. You know, we have raw vegans, we have carnivores, complete opposite ends of the spectrum. And while I do have a recommended way of eating that I call the vital diet, it is very individualized and I don't prescribe just one thing for everyone. So a lot of my work with my clients is really getting them able, as you're saying, like you knew it didn't work for you, and really like trying to help them learn how to understand what their bodies are trying to tell them. Because that's what symptoms are. Right? We have stomach aches, we have headaches, we have anxiety. It's our body trying to alert us that something is going on. And unfortunately, we have all these medications that stop it. You have a headache, you take ibuprofen. You have heartburn, you take an antacid. Just suppress, suppress, suppress. That oftentimes, you know, these signals are sort of like a check engine light that will come on. If you take a medication, it's sort of like you just turn off that check engine light, but you don't figure out what's going on under the hood of the car. And so eventually people will get into a big accident or there'll be this huge health crisis because these alarm signals have just been silenced.
Interesting.
So I, same thing when we're trying different ways of eating, it's like, you know what, we have to do a little bit of a science experiment and we're going to see how you feel with this. I find very few people, very few women at least, feel great with intermittent fasting. I think people, and I'm guilty of this, I got really attached through the science that was out there, the science
Yes.
just on men. And I was like, no, I must feel, yeah, my whole thing was like, I must feel irritable and crabby and hungry because I'm just not strong enough to do it, but I know that I
Yes.
can do it. And so I would white knuckle it and just be so shaky. And then I would eat and feel better and be like, okay. So finally I stopped doing it.
Oh my
Yeah.
goodness, me too. I was like, I gotta get it together. Like, I'm gonna do
Yeah.
this. I felt horrible. Like, I just was
Yeah.
not working for me. So I'm glad
Yeah.
that you said that. You know, I think that it's so important to listen to our bodies and to know that not everything is going to be for you, and that's okay. You know, it
Yeah.
really is okay.
Yeah, and I tell my clients all the time, you know, it's not my way or the highway. Like, I really try and cultivate a really safe and comfortable environment with my clients. So if I ever say something that doesn't resonate with them or they maybe don't want to try, you know, there are things I will very strongly encourage, and maybe the reason they're having a hesitation is they just don't have enough information, but they never have to do anything. You know, I want them to have full agency over their health choices and their decisions.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. We've touched on components of the vital diet. Walk me through a little bit more in detail, like some of the things that are key tenets of the vital diet.
Yeah, as much as possible, eating whole, unprocessed foods. So the vital diet is rich in healthy fats.
Right.
That's another definite nutrition myth, is that fats make you fat. Good quality fats are so good for us, especially
Wow.
for hormonal health, as they're the backbone of our hormones. Clean sources of protein, and then tons and tons of vegetables. Some fruits, you know, and then minimal grains, depending on the person. Sometimes people can tolerate grains better than others. I advocate for a gluten-free diet or a gluten-light diet. Even if people don't have celiac disease, I just feel like gluten is not a health-promoting substance. Truthfully, though, it's not necessarily because of the gluten. Sometimes it is, but it's mostly because of the glyphosate. So glyphosate is the chemical in Roundup that's sprayed on all gluten-containing grains, and it is a known carcinogen. It wreaks havoc on our microbiome. It's super pro-inflammatory. And it's why people who may have been diagnosed with some type of gluten sensitivity or intolerance can go to Europe and eat bread and feel totally fine. It's not the
This is
gluten.
me.
Yeah, me too. It's not the gluten. It's the chemicals in our food. So the vital diet is really focused on, you know, eating as minimal pesticide exposure as possible, just to reduce our overall toxin exposure. So I advocate for following the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. Clean 15, for people who may not know. So the Dirty Dozen are types of produce. It's usually where you're eating the outer skin, like apples or berries, and that's where they're sprayed. So they have a higher level of pesticide exposure. Clean 15 would be things like avocados or bananas, where you have a thick outer coating that you peel off. So you actually don't need to buy those organic, and you can actually save a little bit of money because conventional is totally fine. And there are still treats and sweets, and I love chocolate, I love ice
Me
cream,
too.
but there is a way to have them, and there's a certain types that are better than others. There's also a certain timing to when you have these things that don't spike our blood glucose as much. I don't know if anyone follows the glucose goddess, but Jessie Inshouse-Bey, I think is her last name, does an amazing, she has an amazing Instagram account where she talks about ways in which to consume glucose or sugar-containing foods in a way that doesn't spike your blood glucose, which is great.
I would love for you to talk about that because
Yeah.
I've heard some information. I've heard, I'm a chocoholic. Like I absolutely love chocolate, and I've
Yeah.
heard, pair chocolate with nuts or pair it with a good fat or
Yeah.
things like that. So we'd love, what is the science out there and what should you do?
So in terms of blood glucose balancing, anytime you have a sugar, whether it is you're eating, you know, gummy bears or chocolate or even berries, you don't want to ever have a carbohydrate, a sugar by itself, because then it just gets absorbed rapidly into your bloodstream, could cause a big spike in blood glucose. And then when we have a big spike, we have a big drop. And those drop in blood glucose can make us feel irritable, lightheaded, shaky, crabby, and it also triggers cravings. So if you pair a carb with a fat or a protein or both, rather than these big peaks and valleys, you get nice, slow, rolling hills throughout the day. We have a gradual increase, a gradual decline, not a plummet that triggers a craving. So, you know, if you're going to have chocolate, have it with a little bit of peanut butter or a little bit of coconut butter, even a handful of nuts. If you're going to have berries, have it with some full fat yogurt if you tolerate dairy, or coconut yogurt or something like that. And also, if you're going to have, say you're going to have full on ice cream cone or, you know, a piece of cake, Have it right at the end of a meal where you've had protein and fiber. So if you have a
Okay.
salad and steak and an ice cream cone, the increase in blood glucose is somewhat ne negligible. The least health promoting way to have it would be middle of the afternoon, you haven't eaten in a few hours, then you have the ice cream cone, because then you just get the big spike and the big drop. So, we do it. We do it. It's a good time to have an ice cream cone. So it would actually be better if you ate more, if you had a handful of nuts or just like a little protein bar or something like that, and then had the ice cream rather than having it by itself.
Interesting. Good to know. Good to know. I'm definitely guilty of the afternoon ice cream.
It's summertime.
If nothing else, good to know. I want to dive into some common, I'll call them ailments or things that, we all deal with. So I would love to hear, what are your recommendations for natural ways to deal with, for example, the common cold, something that I just got over a cold. So, I've heard just conflicting information, elderberry, this, that, the other. Like, what are some things that you should do pre and during your cold?
Okay, so the number one thing, which is going to be the hardest, is rest. And I don't mean rest like you're working from home, but you're in bed, but you're still answering emails. I mean full on relaxation, napping, sleep. Sleep is so important for our immune system. It's when antibodies are produced that resting and sleeping is the best thing you can do. Staying well hydrated, eating lots and lots of plants because those have rich phytochemicals in them. In terms of supplements to take, again, it kind of, I don't treat the cold, I treat the person. So it kind of depends on what they're doing. Vitamin C overall can be really wonderful. Vitamin C is really safe to take. You have a little bit too much vitamin C if you start having looser stool. But other than that, you can kind of just take vitamin C up to the point that you're having looser stool and then back off a little bit. But it's a really important antioxidant. It's also a precursor to collagen. So you get a little bit of beauty medicine from the vitamin C as well. Okay, this is something, this is a bit of a weird thing, but I have a collection of text messages on my phone that I need to do a social media post about at one point where people have just said, Kat, I did your sock thing last night and I woke up and I'm not sick. So this is, I'm going to tell everyone about this. This is old school naturopathic medicine from like early 1900s, and it's called warming socks. And so what you do, this is best to do when you first feel like you're getting sick. For me, maybe I'll have a little tickle in my throat or I'll just feel start to get run down. I'll be like, okay, I got to do the sock thing tonight. And what you do is you take two pairs of socks. One is a thin kind of like cotton athletic sock, and then ideally a thicker pair of wool socks. And at night before bed, you want to make sure your feet are warm to start. So I tend to have cold feet, so I'll just run them under the tub and some warm water so they're warm. Then you get the cotton thin socks wet with cool to cold water, wring them out so they're not soaking wet, put them on. Not gonna lie, it sucks, but it only sucks for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, it was like
Then
a
you put,
cold sock. Yuck.
and then you put the thick wool socks on over, and then you just get in bed and go to sleep. And many people, when I tell them this, they look at me like, what are you talking about? But here's what happens. So at night while you're sleeping, your feet are now cold with this wet material on them. And so the blood vessels in your feet vasodilate, which pulls congestion down from the head and from the neck down to your feet to warm them up, which allows for reflexive recirculation of healthy blood and lymph and healing immune cells up here where you're usually fighting off the respiratory virus or cold or whatever it may be. Also, it allows, I find in most of my clients, they sleep so much better doing this therapy. I've even done it where I haven't been sick. I just wanted to make sure I slept really well. And as I said before, sleep is so important for the immune system. And so I promise you have to just trust me on this one, but I have a list of people. It's usually my friends, not my patients, being like, okay, I did your sock thing. I'm not sick. And it's amazing, amazing,
This
just kind of
is
weird hack.
Wait, so wait, just to back up, I want to make sure I have it because I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna try this and report back to you. I actually do have a slight sore throat now, which is really interesting. You could kind of maybe hear it a little bit. So wait, I am supposed to take a thinner cotton sock and put that on first, wet it. So make sure my feet are warm first, then wet and wring out the sock, and
Yeah,
then
you don't
put
want it
the
to be
cold.
soaking wet because it'll get your bed all wet and you won't sleep well.
Then after that, I put a large wool sock, like maybe I have wool socks for snowboarding, for example. So maybe like put like a snowboarding sock over the wet sock on both feet and then go to sleep.
And what usually happens is people wake up and their feet are roasting hot and the socks are completely dry. You can just kick them off if that happens and go back to bed.
Right.
Yeah.
This
It's
is.
really, yeah. And so you can do it 3 nights in a row, but sometimes one is enough to just, especially if you catch it early.
Okay, how interesting. I'm gonna try this tonight. I'm
Yeah.
gonna try. I was like, I don't know why my throat's a little sore. I don't know why. I feel fine,
Yeah.
but I'm gonna try this and we'll see what happens. That's so awesome. I've never heard that in my
Yeah,
life.
I know. I
That's
figured it'd be a good thing
amazing.
to talk about just because it's like kind of, and it's, I hope it's still being taught in naturopathic colleges, but yeah, it's definitely an old school remedy. For kids, if anyone's listening and have little kiddos, I call it magic socks just because it sounds nicer. You kind of like wave the wand over their
Yeah.
feet and make a little game out of it. So,
It's so cute. I love it. Magic
yeah.
socks. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. 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 Going to do that. How about for stress? I mean, like we all go through periods of stress. What are some natural remedies? What are some practices that you would recommend for stress?
Yeah, my favorite is probably an earthing practice where earthing is the act of like actually putting your feet on the ground, not on concrete, not on pavement, not on wood, but on the physical earth. You know, we are natural beings. We're meant to have this close connection to the planet, but we wear rubber-soled shoes, we drive in cars, we walk on sidewalks. We have very, especially people live in urban areas, we have very little contact with the planet. So what I have people do, it's great to do first thing in the morning. And if you live in a city where maybe you don't have a yard or something like that, you can go to a park, just make sure it's a clean area. Take your shoes and socks off, stand up, put your feet on the ground, and just visualize any type of stress, negativity, tension, just kind of do a body scan and have it go from your head down through your legs out into the earth. The earth will lovingly accept it while doing some deep belly breathing. So when we belly breathe, I have people put one hand on their chest and one hand on their belly. You can back up and see. You want to breathe so just the lower hand over your abdomen is moving up and down. When we're stressed, we tend to breathe up here and pull up with our shoulders. But when we actually engage our abdomen and our belly moves in and out, that stimulates the vagus nerve, which I talked about earlier. So that can stimulate our vagus nerve from going that sympathetic fight or flight response into the parasympathetic rest, digest, detox, healing response. I'm a huge advocate for meditation. Meditation can be challenging in the beginning, and I think there's a common misconception that to be meditating properly, you're sitting in absolute stillness with no thoughts in your head. No, that's not what meditation is. Meditation is just the awareness of every time that you have a thought and coming back to whatever your anchor is. Maybe it's something you're looking at, maybe it's breathing, maybe it's a mantra. But I don't consider myself an experienced meditator. I have a daily practice for years, but people who I've talked to who have gone and lived in monasteries and things like that, they say you never, even at that point when you're meditating in like silent retreat for a month, there are still thoughts. That is what our brain is designed to do. It's designed to think. It will think. But you just want to gradually coax it back to whatever your anchor is. And that is really the act of it. And I just started reading last night, actually, How to Break Up with Your Phone, which is a very short book written by a journalist
Interesting.
about just check these way too frequently.
Yes.
And for many people, just even if it's just having a lunch break and not having their phone with them and just focusing on the food that they're eating or focusing on conversation can be a nice way to. Just sort of like help regulate the nervous system in the middle of a work day. And I work with a lot of people who are, business owners and parents, and they have just been putting everyone else's needs first. And what I tell people is, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I really believe that self-care is a selfless act. If we just take even if just 5 minutes for yourself to do something that's really nourishing for you, not scrolling social media, not buying that thing that you needed to buy, but like something that's really going to help you feel better and more grounded, you can then pass on those good feelings to others, and everyone else in your life benefits if you take some time for yourself.
Couldn't agree more. I'll have to check out that book about the phone. The other day, I left my
Yeah.
phone at home and I was in full panic. I was like, how sad. This is so sad. Like, I
Yeah.
don't need my phone. I'm going out for an event. Like, what? Why am I stressing out? It was such actually a good lesson for me. And I had a great evening because I wasn't, checking my text messages and stressing about social media and whatever it may be. I totally agree. It's so important. With meditation, just curious on what meditation practice. Do you adhere to a practice? Do you have, music that you listen to or, things on YouTube? Walk me through that a bit.
Yeah, I started. So I've tried many different avenues. There's lots of great apps. I personally like the Waking Up app, though Calm and Headspace are other ones as well. I currently I don't listen to anything. I tried it. I do half inside, half outside. And I now for the last month, I've been pairing my meditation with some stretching because I'm realizing I live a pretty active life, but I wasn't prioritized. I'm doing less yoga now, and I just find myself feeling a little bit more physically tense. So, you can do meditation while walking. You don't have to be sitting in like lotus position on a cushion. So yeah, what I do is I have a breath as an anchor, and so sometimes I'll do different breathwork practices, or I'll just focus on belly breathing. And I do have a cushion, and I sit in my bedroom and do it. I really like doing it outside too, but sometimes there's a little bit more distractions. We're also having a heat wave right now in Portland. It's like 100 degrees, so I'm
Oh, really?
not meditating outside. Yeah, it's annoying, but it's ending today, thankfully.
Yeah,
So
no.
yeah,
That's
but actually,
amazing.
my a really wonderful resource, which is sort of like I call it my gateway drug to meditation, is Sarah Blondin. She has Blondin is her name, and she has these really beautiful. She's basically a poet, and just these really beautiful kind of talks. They're on Spotify and YouTube and things like that, and they're all free, which is great. And she kind of very inspirational person.
I love that. I love that. For me, I found that I need the kind of the music and the like someone speaking positive affirmations. Like I listen to things from Goodful, great meditation tracks, on YouTube because I like, or else my brain's like bing 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 bing. And I find that like having the voice is actually the calming force for me to focus on what what someone's saying. I'm always curious about what people what people do.
Yeah, I definitely mix it up. Like I go through phases of like listening to different things, but right now I'm currently in a silent phase.
Right. Awesome. And curious, I want to transition. So a little bit, something that I hear about all the time is chronic illness. People who are suffering from all sorts of different things, whether it be irritable bowel syndrome or people dealing with, like myself, uterine fibroids. What is your approach? And I know there's not one, thing, but just curious about some steps or some thoughts, on treating chronic illnesses or conditions. And how can you do it in a way that's different and, that also is taking naturopathic medicine into consideration of your treatment plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So most actually I don't I guess I don't want to say all, I don't want to talk in absolutes, but almost all of my patients are always coming with chronic issues. I don't really do a lot of acute primary care stuff. And what we want to do is we really need to emphasize the foundations. So there are some really high-end, awesome therapies that are available now, like IV therapy and hyperbaric oxygen and NAD infusions and red light and all of these sort of fancy, shiny things. But if people aren't moving their bodies, if they aren't eating a health-promoting diet, if they aren't relaxing, if they aren't having joy in their life, they're never going to feel better, no matter how many multi-thousand dollar packages for fancy things they purchase. And so a lot of what I do with people is find out, okay, like what can we add in? And then what can we take away? Like what potentially health harming habits are there that we can try to minimize? And what health adding things can we bring on? And that's why I like to look, just going back to how I work with people and keeping close contact is, as you alluded to earlier, this isn't about flicking a light switch and completely overhauling your life. This is about slow, steady, incremental change. And so, I tell people, you can't walk 10 miles into the woods and expect to get out in two. There usually, almost always, is not a quick fix. It does take some time, but the slower changes are just that much more sustainable and will lead people to a higher level of health further down the road. Not that it's garbage by any means, but that so many things have been thrown in there and labeled IBS, which is why there just isn't one treatment. So you have to figure out like what exactly is the imbalance that's present that we can fix. Yeah, and just also really enforcing, like I always want to check in and make sure that people truly believe that healing is possible. Because if there's doubt, they will never get to the level of health that they deserve to be at. So we have to do some kind of mindset shifting sometimes with people, and especially for folks who it's so understandably have seen so many doctors and just been so invalidated.
Absolutely. I think the mindset is key. It's the first step, and being able to actually be open to change, being open to the fact that your body is able to heal itself. Mindset is absolutely everything. Totally was just thinking about one of the things that I've heard in my health journey. Like, don't drink coffee and no alcohol. I would love your hot take on those two things I love. I love myself some red wine and I love myself some coffee in the morning. Would love, you know, the naturopath's view on these two things.
All right, I am all about balance. So, coffee. I love coffee. I go through phases of having caffeinated coffee and decaf coffee. I'm currently weaning off caffeine. I usually tend to ramp up a little bit too much, realize I'm feeling a bit more tense, and then ramp back down. But no, I think coffee is a natural antidepressant. It's rich in antioxidants, especially if it's organic. It is not as health harming for most people as some things would allow you to believe. The best way to have coffee is with or after breakfast. You don't want coffee to be the first thing in your system. So I always want people to wake up, drink a big glass of water, and then wait to have caffeine at least with food. Because if we have coffee by itself, it can actually negatively affect our hormones. It can really spike our cortisol. It can be a bit acidic for the stomach. Yeah. And so if you have it by yourself and you're not eating breakfast yet, you know, you can add some collagen in. If you use animal products, you can add in some grass-fed butter or some ghee or some coconut milk and kind of do the bulletproof coffee sort of a thing where you're getting some fat and some protein in with it. Yeah, so that can be a really great thing to do. And then, of course, if people have significant adrenal dysfunction, that may be a time where maybe we switch to decaf or some of these other kind of coffee alternatives for a while we're healing. And then if people are drinking, you know, 8 cups of coffee a day and no water and have high blood pressure and lots of anxiety, then we're definitely going to pare it back down. But I think 1 to 2 cups of coffee per day is okay. And you know what, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, when it's dark out, people love their coffee and they love the ritual. And I, you know, it brings them a lot of joy. I don't want to take that away from them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is a health promoting way to have it for most people. And then alcohol is not a health promoting substance. Case in point, it has been really normalized in our society. Yeah. And, you know, red wine has antioxidants, all these things. Sure. But the alcohol itself is toxic.
Right.
However, there is not a health promoting way to have alcohol, but there are certainly less health harming ways to have it. Similar to coffee, I don't ever recommend having alcohol in an empty stomach. You're going to go out and have some drinks with friends. You know, you want to make sure that you eat before, especially having some protein. I always recommend having 1 glass of water for every glass of alcohol. Mm. It does mean you're going to be going to the bathroom a lot and peeing, but that's okay. Right. And then the healthiest or the least health harming types of alcohol would be clear spirits like tequila, gin, vodka with soda water and bitters and citrus. That would be my like most like healthiest kind of cocktail option. Red wine, especially natural or biodynamic varietals, because they don't use any pesticides or herbicides in the wine. Second best type of wine would be just plain old organic wine. And third best would be wine from really arid regions like Chile. They actually need to use a lot fewer chemicals in areas where there's not a lot of moisture for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure.
You know that.
Yeah. 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 And then another little hack that I have, and I big disclaimer, this is not a get out of jail free card. It is not an ability to then go and binge drink with no consequences. But there is a supplement that can help our body better process alcohol and reduce the side effects of a hangover. And that's something called N-acetylcysteine or NAC. NAC is a supplement. It's actually, it's a big antioxidant in our body, and it's a precursor to glutathione, which is our major detox molecule. And what it does is, so when we drink alcohol, so you have a glass of wine, the first thing alcohol does in our liver is turn into something called acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde is really toxic, and a buildup of acetaldehyde in our bodies is what makes us feel so crummy. It gives us a headache, you know, it makes us feel really lethargic and kind of just icky. What NAC does, if you take it around the time you're drinking, it could be a little bit before, during, or right after, it actually helps the clearance of acetaldehyde. So your body gets this toxic metabolite out a lot faster. I usually carry it with me in case I ever like am out with someone. I like I've gotten all my friends, certainly my clients, but also all my friends on the NAC tip as well. And that, you know, I'm just a huge advocate for harm reduction. People are going to drink. Let's just have them drink in a way that is less harmful to our bodies.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Good to know. I never heard of NAC. I'm going to definitely have to, you know, it's so interesting because I'll go through phases where it's like, okay, no, I'm not going to drink. And then other phases where it's like, oh, you know, we're going to a nice dinner. Let's have some, you know, and it's good to know that we all know alcohol is not good for you, but if there's a way to do it, that's, you know, least harmful or less harmful.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. And same thing with alcohol or treats or whatever it may be, gluten. I just tell people save it for something that's worth it.
Agreed.
You know, if it's, so let's use cake as an analogy, like save it for like your grandma's favorite recipe that you make on your birthday or your friend's birthday or something like that. Don't eat the like day old donuts your coworker brought in that have just been sitting there because you're not going to like them. They're not going to be very good. They're just there and you probably won't feel as good afterwards. So if you are going to have an indulgence, whether it's alcohol or chocolate or sweets or bread or whatever it may be, you know, save it for something that's worth it. Save it for something that you love and then really be present with it as you're having. Like take that sip of wine and be like, oh, this is amazing. I'm here with my friends. This tastes so good. I love it. I love my life. And really just be present in that moment and then move on. If you're going to have an indulgence and then you're going to, you know, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I honestly think that negative thought is more harmful than whatever the indulgence might have been.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that being present and mindful. You know, I think that's so important. Actually savoring versus just, you know, just,
Guzzling it
yeah,
down, getting a
exactly.
beer with lunch just because they have it on the menu. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Want to ask, you know, a question that I've heard a ton, like a lot of people are interested in switching to a more holistic lifestyle. What are maybe three or four things that you would recommend someone to do if they're just getting into it?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, and like you said as well, you know, this isn't about totally overhauling your life overnight. I would say some things to look into the foods that you're putting in your body and start reading labels. If you look at the label from a packaged good and there's a bunch of words on there that you don't recognize, or they have numbers, or you know, the font is super tiny and there's 13 different things, it's probably not the most health promoting thing. You know, the best foods out there don't have an ingredient label. Or they have a short list of things that you recognize. And when you're looking for products, whether it's food or personal care products or cleaning products, you want to find a company that's like, look, this is what's in here. You don't want to find the company where you have to peel back the label and it's in size 2 font and they hide it because they're hiding something, right? They want to be like, company should be proud of what they are putting in their products. So as they start looking at your labels, start looking at the labels for personal care products as well. There's this really great resource, the Environmental Working Group. They have this barcode scanner app called Healthy Living. You can go and you can scan all of your like your makeup and your cleaning products and you know your shampoo and everything on there, and it gives you a score. And ideally, you know, you don't necessarily need to have everything in the green, but if you look and you're like, oh wow, everything I use in my bathroom is actually red, then when it's time to buy something new, you know, you can opt for some cleaner ingredients because something like the average, I might be misquoting this, but it's something like the average person in the United States puts 174 different chemicals on their body every day.
Every day, which is
Yeah.
crazy. That's how we started Clean
Yeah.
Rebellion,
Yes.
our brand,
Yes.
because
Preaching to the choir
it's
here. Yeah.
craziness.
Yeah. So those are some really easy shifts that you can make. Move your body. And then, yeah, in terms of, you know, be just wary of marketing from supplements, I will say. You know, the wellness world is super hot right now, and I love it. I love that it is cool to be healthy and be taking care of yourself. But there's a lot of products out there that say that they will lighten your toxin load, like DIY detox products, but really all they end up doing is lightening your wallet. So that's where I advocate, you know, you can go to, you know, find a naturopathic doctor near you or a functional medicine doctor and look for a search and have someone who can work with you to give you some really good guidance because, you know, we all need mentors. I have my own mentors. I'm not my own doctor. You know, we really need someone else to kind of walk hand in hand with us and show us the way and be objective because it's so hard to be objective with yourself.
So hard to be objective. You know, you can kind of always justify things to yourself, but having someone else call you out is key, I think.
Yeah.
Very, very important. I want to transition here. We're going to go
Okay.
down our Reddit rabbit hole. So we've scanned Reddit to pick a couple of questions to ask Dr. Kat. I've sent these to you before, so I'm going to read
Yeah.
part of them. And then we'll share, of course, share them on the screen so people can see, you know, these questions. So the first one I want to start off with is the question is, anyone, is there a way to restore teeth? And the person goes into this description. I'll give a couple of lines to say, my teeth are naturally straight, but I had 9 bad teeth pulled at 13 and then got braces, and my teeth are so weak, 2 of my top front teeth start to chip a lot, and I feel like they're thinning. So on and so forth. So that, you know, then they conclude with, I feel like my teeth can regrow, but I don't know what I would be able to need to do to be able to do that. Teeth are bones, is how they end. So just curious, Dr. Kat, help us. Is there a way to restore teeth?
Yes. So, I mean, I don't know the extent of this person's teeth. I wouldn't make a guarantee that now their teeth are going to be back to perfect how they were back in the day. But there's this really amazing ingredient in a lot of toothpaste now called nano hydroxyapatite that actually helps remineralize teeth. So first, I would always advocate for this person. You know, we want to make sure they should work with someone who can look at their gut health to make sure they're actually able to be absorbing calcium and things like that, which our teeth need and bones need to grow. But something they can do in the meantime is some brands are Boca and Rise, and there's a bunch out there, but again, it's called nanohydroxyapatite. And it's interesting. So you use a toothpaste and you actually don't spit, you spit, but you don't rinse your mouth out afterwards. You actually let the toothpaste, it's safe to stay in your mouth, and you want it to have more contact with your teeth because it can actually help remineralize. So it can actually help, you know, make your teeth harder again. And so it's really not even for someone, maybe not, this seems like it's a pretty serious situation, but just for the average person can help prevent against cavities and things like that.
Interesting. I had not heard of that. Wow. Does it do anything for for cavities, or at that point
I
you're already
think
in
once the
trouble because
cavity's there, you want to go and have
yeah.
it filled. Yeah, I don't think it will completely do it, especially because there can be infection and things like that. And then I would also recommend seeing a biological dentist. So they're sort of like the naturopathic doctors of the dental world. The dental world is really in the stone ages. Like they're, you know, the dental school here in Portland is still putting, still advocating for putting mercury fillings in people,
which
which
is like
is not good.
Oh,
So biological dentists have done a lot more holistic training, and they look at you as not just here, but they look at you as a whole person, have a really, really good education on how the mouth affects the rest of the body and vice versa.
right. I
There's
forget
like
the
really
thing.
interesting research with cardiovascular disease and gingivitis, for example.
Yes. I started my career in healthcare, you know, working
Oh,
in
okay.
insurance, and you know, I did a bunch of training on conditions, and it was interesting. The dental program that we, you know, had, that was the biggest thing. It was, you know, a lot of cardiovascular issues actually start in the mouth, which I was shocked, astounded, and I think a lot of people forget that. You
Yeah,
know, it's so
there's your
important to
reminder to
take care.
floss.
Yes, exactly. Floss, floss, please floss. You know, yes. Awesome. Okay, another question in our Reddit rabbit hole. So the person says, and this is posted in the holistic med subreddit. This person says, "Need answers badly. I've tried everything. Please be kind. I'm a 30-something-year-old woman who has been dealing with bad breath and sometimes vaginal odor for most of her life, and I have no idea what's wrong. Before you ask, I've seen a dentist, a gynecologist, and ENT many times before. My ENT is stumped, and he sent me to get every test done imaginable so far. The smell is coming from the back of my tongue, like my throat. If that makes sense, and if I brush and floss constantly. My throat gets sore for a lot of reason. I have difficulty swallowing drinks, and sometimes it gets super bad whenever I have alcohol, which kills any sort of social life. Coffee too. The same with vaginal odor. I can tell really if it's there all the time, but I can notice it more after having coffee since it will produce a fishy smell, and it gets really bad after alcohol as well. I don't overdo either of them. And I'm constantly washing to try to eliminate the smells. It's driving me crazy since I've had these smells for most of my life. And as you can imagine, it's stopping me from having confidence and getting close to others and letting go and having fun. I've switched diets, I don't know how many times, to the point where I just stopped eating almost altogether to try to see what is triggering this." Wow. I mean, this is just, you know, so many things. Right now I'm trying vegan. I would get some antibiotics for my gyno, but they only seem to work temporarily and the smell always comes back. I've considered suicide so much because I'm not living, which is so terrible. Oh my gosh. This is like, you know, and they continue on, you know, about just, I mean, they've tried everything. So they say it's a slow death I'm in. I'm so isolated. I'm driven crazy and not even knowing what's going on or what's going wrong. I will gladly take any ideas, spiritual healing, holistic healing, medical advice, anything. I'm more of a spiritual person. So I was thinking, could it have something to do with that? But I was only a kid when this started, so I don't know. Please be kind in your response. Thank you." So I wanted to honor this person by reading the whole thing because they were so vulnerable and, you know, really sharing and looking for answers. And I mean, what they're going through is just, I mean, I send such love to this person, and I wanted to give them, you know, the stage to have you answer their question as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I this is so heartbreaking and a
I
story
know.
I hear so frequently. Not necessarily these exact symptoms, but just I've had these symptoms going on for years. I tried a million things. I've seen these specialists. This is kind of the case in point of the person who's gone with the three blind people examining the elephant.
Right.
They, I hope, if they have the means to go and see someone integratively, because what I really believe is going on is something in the gut.
Yeah.
So especially with the bad breath, that could be dysbiosis or a microbiome imbalance in the gut, especially if they've been on a lot of antibiotics, that can really set up the stage for dysbiosis. So the analogy I use in my practice a lot is our gut is kind of like a garden.
Right.
Antibiotics, sort of like you go through the garden, you rip everything out. And I don't know, for those of you garden, if you clear out a garden bed, what grows back first? It's not like all of a sudden your tomatoes come back and your flowers, it's the weeds. And so then these weeds just take over. And so the average gut in the United States is kind of like an overgrown garden riddled with weeds. And people hear, oh, I should just take probiotics. But probiotics are like these beautiful kind of like orchid seeds. And if you put the orchid seeds in the garden that's filled with weeds, they're never going to grow. Mm-hmm. So they have to go on a comprehensive gut healing protocol to weed out the imbalances. Then you can, you know, nourish the soil, give it water, and then you can plant the seeds. And so, and take probiotics. And so this person, actually, their bad breath, dysbiosis, the malodor coming from the vaginal canal can also be due to dysbiosis further up in the gut that then can be transferred down to the vagina. And the inability to tolerate coffee or alcohol is also usually, to me, saying that they have just a toxin overload in their liver, which can be due to the gut microbiome imbalance as well. And so anytime someone has something that is a little bit harder for our body to detoxify, like if you ever hear someone say, oh, I can't even have one glass of wine because it just makes me feel so sick and so hungover the next day, they need additional liver support. So if this person somehow is listening to this podcast, give me a call. I do free consults and I would absolutely love to talk with you. And, you know, maybe if they're outside of my area, I can refer them somewhere. But this is something that I know their symptoms have been going on for so long. But once, if they can do some microbiome testing, they can heal relatively quickly, which would be amazing. They can have their quality of life back. They can have their social life back. But I do also, I just also want to honor the fact that this person notes healing on kind of all layers. And, you know, yes, we can do physical body healing, but mental, emotional, and spiritual as well is all important in terms of reaching optimal health.
Wow. I pray, you know, honestly, sending light and love to this person. Hopefully they do listen, and maybe we'll link up this podcast and Reddit so that they know that they're, you know,
oh, we should totally do that.
And,
and I also want to say to this person, if they are listening, like, your symptoms are totally valid. And I just want to apologize in the greater behalf of, on behalf of the greater medical industry for how you have been not been respected and gotten the best treatment.
Agree. Thank you so, so much for answering their question. Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to transition to our final segment. So this segment is called What's in Your Bag? So we have asked Dr. Kat to prepare a bag of some of the things that she uses regularly, she recommends. So I will turn it over to you to share and show us what's in your bag.
I was so excited to do this. Okay, I've got some fun ones and hopefully some new things for people. The first one may not be new, but it is so, so, so important. And it is digestive bitters. So digestive bitters are, this is a blend. It comes in a nice little kind of spray top that you can just spray in your tongue 10 minutes to 10 seconds before eating. 10 minutes is best, but I got to tell you, I usually forget. So I just use them as I'm sitting down to eat. And these are important because when we taste bitter or sour on our tongue before a meal, it starts a whole digestive cascade. So we start making more saliva. Our saliva has enzymes in it, which break down our food. It also starts a release of a hormone called cholecystokinin, which tells our stomach, hey, we're about to get some food, and our pancreas, hey, food's coming. So our stomach makes more stomach acid. Our pancreas makes more digestive enzymes. So if we do it before a meal, by the time our food gets into our stomach, it's readily able to be digested. And these bitters stimulate our vagus nerve. You've heard me talk about the vagus nerve now. It's important for digestion. So all too frequently, you know, I'm guilty of this too, but we eat on the go, we eat while we're answering emails, we eat walking down the street. We're not eating in a calm, relaxed environment.
Right.
I want to use all my possible tools to help people really optimize their digestion because they're able to break down the food that they're eating thoroughly. Bloating is better. They have more regular bowel movements. they're actually able to absorb all the nutrients in the food that they're eating. If you don't use bitters and you are eating while you're driving or something like that, your body realizes it's time to eat when the food just plops into your stomach, and then it won't be thoroughly broken down. So you can feel bloated afterwards, or you can have undigested food in your stool, or you're not actually getting all the goodies out of that kale salad that you're eating because it's just going through unprocessed. So this also is a nice reminder that, oh, okay, it's time to relax, it's time to eat. So I keep this in my purse and
How
use this all the time.
interesting. That is, do you mind holding it up again? I just want to see
It's
the.
called Better Bitters from Herb Farm.
Okay.
There's so many different brands of digestive bitters out there. Whatever tastes good to you, it's great. I just like this because it has the spray, so it's really easy to
Love
use.
that. That's so
Yeah.
cool. I'd never heard of that. That's a new one for me. So that's awesome.
Great. Okay. And then there's no way I could do this presentation without talking about probably my most recommended and my personal favorite supplement ever, and it's glycine.
Glycine.
So glycine is a single amino acid that is an inhibitory neuro, also acts as an inhibitory neurotransmitter. So it's calming to the brain. So this is something that you take. I advocate for taking it at night before bed. There's a little scoop in here, or if you buy it in capsules, you can take the capsules. And you just take one scoop as you're getting ready for bed. You can put it in some chamomile tea. You can put it in a little bit of water. You can just dump it in your mouth and take a sip of water afterwards. And it's really calming to the brain. So it helps people stay asleep. Insomnia is a huge thing that I treat all the time, people waking up frequently. This can keep people asleep at night. Great thing about glycine is it also tastes mildly sweet. There's no sugar in it, but it tastes kind of good. And in the natural world, many of the things we give people aren't the most flavorful or most palatable. They're flavorful, but it's a strong flavor. So it's really nice to give someone something that's yummy.
Right.
Okay, so that's one thing that glycine does, is it helps with sleep. It's also a precursor to collagen, so it's really great for helping to heal from leaky gut. It's great for hair, skin, and nail support. It's a beauty supplement. And it helps with optimal formation of bile. Now, bile is something that is really important for detoxification and digestion. And it does so many things. It's really easy to take, and it is just wonderful. I've had people who have had insomnia for years, and they start taking glycine, and they're just like, they look at me and they're like, "How, where were you 10 years ago? Like, this is all that I needed to sleep. Are you kidding?" So sometimes it's not, sometimes there's more things you have to do, but it can, it's really, really awesome. So I love glycine. It's cheap, it's effective, wonderful.
I'm amazed. I've never heard of glycine, and sometimes I do struggle with insomnia. And I've tried multiple things, like more of, sleep hygiene and masks and these things. And they haven't really, it's a mixed bag. Wow,
Yeah, well,
what?
let me be clear. You can't, glycine is not powerful enough that you can be on your phone until you go
Of
to bed,
course.
and then it'll knock
Right.
you out. But if you're doing all these other things, if you're sleeping in a cool, dark room, if you're avoiding screens for 30 minutes before bedtime, and you're using an eye mask and you're still not really getting that restorative sleep, highly recommend glycine. It's incredibly safe. And it's the nice thing about it too is it's not like a sleep aid that makes people feel groggy the next day. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
It can also be helpful taking during the day if people feel anxious, because again, it is that calming neurotransmitter as
Interesting.
well. Yeah.
Quick question, glycine versus melatonin. Like, is there one that you would advocate for or, just curious?
So if people take melatonin, I advocate for taking liposomal melatonin or fat encapsulated melatonin. You only really need like 1 milligram of that, and you hold it under your tongue for 30 seconds before
Right.
bed. Melatonin helps you fall asleep. Glycine helps you stay asleep. You can take both together.
Okay.
I really also like the liposomal form of the melatonin because it helps support our glymphatic system in our brain. That's the lymph in our brain that helps clear up metabolic waste, cellular debris, beta amyloid, which a buildup of beta amyloid is actually what causes Alzheimer's. So liposomal melatonin helps our brain detox at night while we're sleeping and help clear all of that out as well,
Right.
which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Pill form of melatonin, people usually end up taking more like 5 milligrams. And I just find that people don't need to take that much and can sometimes feel groggy in the morning with that dose.
Yeah,
Or
exactly.
sometimes people take melatonin and they wake up a few hours later because, again, they don't have anything in the system that's helping them stay asleep. Yeah, exactly.
This
Exactly.
girl. I'm like, this is not working.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, Nat, what else is in your bag?
Okay, since we've talked about cravings a bit today and like sugar, I wanted to talk about another amino acid called L-glutamine. And this is a cool little hack. So what you do is this, they sell this in powder, but I just have the capsules right now. And I usually give these out as samples to people in my office. So, you know, for me, like somehow whenever like 3 p.m. is like when I'll have a craving for like chocolate usually. And sometimes I'll have chocolate because it's delicious, but sometimes I don't want to have it or I don't need to have it. And so what you can do is you can open a capsule of L-glutamine, put it under your tongue and hold it for 30 seconds. L-glutamine, so it's an amino acid, it's a building block of protein, but it also can be used as fuel for the brain. And it'll basically hijack your brain's craving for sugar and make it go away so you don't have the craving anymore. It's something else like
What?
lysine that's mildly sweet, so it tastes nice. And yeah, you just hold it under your tongue so you get some sublingual absorption of it as well. You can swallow the rest, and it's a really great way to kind of stop those sugar cravings.
I'm blown away. It was 3 o'clock. Usually, like around 2 to 3 is when I'm, you know, in the freezer looking for one of those like ice cream bars.
Yeah, so try it.
Amazing. I didn't know about that. Wow, I'm blown away. 3 out of 3 for things I had no clue.
Okay, awesome. I have one more. This one, so you've seen me, I never leave home without my water bottle. You've probably seen me drinking out of it a few times during this. And something I add to my water are trace minerals. So trace minerals, this one has magnesium, chloride, sodium, potassium, sulfate, lithium, and boron. A lot of them are used as cofactors and enzymatic reactions in our body. And they're usually not found in a lot of drinking water, especially if it's filtered. So you add trace minerals to your water to replenish with these minerals because we lose minerals when we sweat and when we pee. We don't just use water, but it actually makes your water taste better. It tastes smooth and delicious. And it allows for a deeper level of hydration. So if we just drink plain old water, we pee a lot more of it out. If we add minerals to our water, it'll actually allow our cells to hold on to the water a little bit better, so we stay more hydrated. And if you don't have trace minerals, a really easy fix is just using a pinch of nice quality salts. Like this is pink Himalayan salt. You could use Celtic sea salt, real salt, whatever you have. Adding just a pinch of salt to water, especially during these warmer months when we're recording this, is really important for just a deeper level of cellular hydration. Now, your water should not taste salty. If it tastes salty, add more water. It should just taste smooth and delicious.
Amazing. I didn't know that. I use that zero water filter, especially for, you know, here in LA, the water is a little, you know, so, but someone was telling me that it's actually super stripping, like it strips all the minerals out. And to use trace, I haven't done it yet, but good to know. I feel like the universe is giving me a sign, like use trace minerals, you know?
It's really good for skin health too.
Yes.
So,
Amazing. 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 Anything else that we should know? Anything else that, you know, people should be thinking of, you know, if they want to go to a naturopath, or even, you know, just mantras for their health, anything that you'd like to share?
it's really important that you find someone who looks at you as a whole person, validates your experience, and looks at you as more than just your symptoms. And you want to find someone who listens. So I wouldn't just necessarily go with the first person you see at the top of the Google search, but do some research. See, sometimes people offer free consults, or you can call their office if they have a front desk and just learn a little bit more about how they practice. And you just want to find someone that feels like a really good fit, because in the world of naturopathic and functional medicine, it is really like a mentorship, and we stay in very close contact. You just want to be with someone who you respect and who really respects you as well. And also who makes it kind of fun,
Yeah, it
because it
should be
doesn't have to
fun.
be this big, serious, like, oh, everything out there is killing you and you have to change your whole life. Like, it can be fun and exciting and empowering. And, you know, my whole reason for doing this is to reduce the suffering in the world and have people just take pride in their bodies and then feel good about themselves, so, you know, they can pass on those good feelings to others. And yeah, hopefully we have some laughs too.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And where can we find you and follow you online?
On social media, I'm at dr.katbodden, and my website is drkatbodden.com.
Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you,
Oh,
thank
thank
you,
you so
Dr.
much for
You have
having
just
me.
been so amazing. Thank you, your wealth of knowledge. I am extremely grateful, and I know that everyone who watches this episode will just, I mean, literally be enriched with the wealth of knowledge that you shared. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.